Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Planestalkers Podcast, the show by casuals for casuals. I'm your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my favorite, not quite drafting because, you know, he didn't exactly have anyone to draft with this weekend, host Aramis Perez. Aramis, how are you tonight?
I was all alone. I was very sad.
Dude, I was going to try to get there, but now I'm kind of glad I didn't, because if I got there for that, I would have been like,
Would have been Pack Wars, and maybe we could have convinced him to still give us the promo.
Oh, that would have worked. Untap a keep and draw. Which is where we're going to go right now, is we're going to talk about that. So what we're talking about is Friday, you went out to Kerwin's, right, out in Catskill?
I did. I went out there for F&M, and they were supposed to be the, you know, it was release weekend for War of the Spark. And they were going to be doing standard, draft, commander, all that stuff. But I was going for the drafts because I wasn't going to be able to draft Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
So I show up and,
nobody.
I was the only one that signed up for drafts. So there were no drafts. And I didn't have my standard deck with me because I hadn't tuned it yet for War of the Spark. So I didn't have a standard deck either. So I basically got to watch a round of standard and then I went home.
Did you at least play on Arena?
No.
Oh, dude. See, this is, you got to be like me, man. I don't go anywhere without my decks, man. Especially, oh, dude, you know what I did? I finally got a case. So I can give you my old one if you want, dude. I finally have like a case that's actually useful. I went to Walmart, right? Mm-hmm. And I was looking at cases, and my fiance has this makeup case that I thought would be really kind of good because it has trays and stuff. And I'm like, can't get around the fact that it's a makeup case. Like, I just, my head just couldn't do it. And I realized it would only hold like 8 or 9 decks, you know, in the full deck box. And I'm like, my problem is that I've got in standard, between standard and my 3 modern decks and my commander, I've got a good 12 decks built, like, mm-hmm. that I could roll with at any time. And so I'm like, I needed something bigger. Well, I went through the tool section because I had to get something else, and I started looking at like some of the toolboxes, and I'm like, so I got like a $10, like it's about 16 inches, got 2 things on the top to put dice in, like, and it holds like all of my decks and my little righty thing that I use for the points. And I was just like, this is the best thing ever. Like, I kind of want to go and get Velcro to Velcro on the top, like my tube with my, you know, 2 playmats in it.
Right.
Like, I'm like, this is my road box, man. I'm all about this now.
Yeah, the professor on Tulare Community College had actually done a video on unorthodox things that you can use to carry your collection, and like a big like Stanley toolbox thing was one of them. And
right.
I'm actually considering getting, there's like a messenger bag or like a photographer bag, like a camera bag on Amazon you can get for like $20 that apparently is like perfect.
Yeah, because you only have, like, what, 4 decks, if any,
I have
right?
1 deck.
Yeah, I mean, but you could make 4
I could probably make 4 if I really... I could probably make most of the meta if I wanted to, but I don't like bouncing around too much. It like, kind of scatters my focus, although that's not bad for playtesting, but, you know, that's what Arena's for.
Well, for me, I mean, I like having... Given what we do with the club, I like being able to kind of go and, like, switch it up every once in a while. I mean... Here's the thing, and if any of the club is listening, please understand I'm not talking down to you at all, but it gets a little boring if all I'm playing is Esper Control and they're coming at me with their, you know, precons or, you know, like, it's gotten to the point where I have to let them play my decks, and even then, like, unless it's Chris or somebody like that who's kind of had a lot of experience, they miss triggers, and I'm just like, oh.
Well, and Esper Control too is one of the best decks in the format. So I mean, you're gonna crush people, especially if they're not prepared for it.
Is it though? Now, would you say
it's still up there?
It's up there, but
it's still up
is
there.
It really? Is it?
Well, we'll talk about this.
We should just get right into that because
main phase.
Look at that, we're 4 minutes in and we're already in our main phase. But, I mean, we had our first event. And I will give you this, okay? You are 100%, this is mea culpa time. You were right. Absolutely. You said it, you called it, I should have known better. I guess this is a thing that I didn't realize. This is where the bi-casuals, 4 casuals comes into play. You were like, it's going to be an aggro weekend, man. You see a lot of mono red. I'm like, and I remember looking at you, and I think I even said on the air, I was like, you're full of crap. They're not going to, who's going to walk away from Esper? Like, Yeah, everybody.
Well, and
everybody.
Well, here's the thing, though, too. This was actually kind of an unusual weekend because, yes, this is true. The first weekend after a set drops, aggro usually does pretty well. But control normally doesn't do well for the first few weeks because it normally takes some time for the deck to get tuned and for it to say, okay, well, these are the decks that are out there. This is how I can beat them. But Esper is so powerful. There's actually two different Esper decks that were among the top decks in day two at Richmond.
Well, they moved from control to mid-range.
Yeah, there's a control and a mid-range variant. And both of them, like, they're basically like two different flavors of ice cream. They're still delicious. But they're a little bit different.
It's almost actually, to go a little deeper, for me, I actually would consider it more like, you know, French vanilla and vanilla. Like, it's different flavors of vanilla.
Or actually, like, you know what? Since we're talking about food, it's making me hungry. It's like ice cream.
I
you
KFC
can get
out here,
you
man.
Can get, like, the toppings on it and the mix-ins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, Esper mid-range is like vanilla ice cream with, like, you know, rainbow sprinkles and stuff. It's nice. Whereas Esper control is like, it's got like the Snickers candy bar bits in it.
Well, I mean, and I look at this Esper mid-range deck, and I don't disagree with you, by the way, not to tear that away from you.
So tasty.
But I take a look at this, and it's like, basically, it's Esper control post-sideboard, and hey, we threw Sorin in.
Kind of, yeah. It's basically like, you know, Thief of Sanity is awesome anyway, so let's just throw it in there, and we'll throw a couple of the little random dorks in there, and maybe a little bit more aggressive on the removal package, not quite so many counterspells, but it's essentially, it's beatdown version of the same deck.
Well, yeah, what they took out was, it looks like they took out the absorbs. You keep Thought Erasure, obviously. Mortify. They upped it one Mortify. They added the two Inner God Eternals. But they added in four Thieves, four Heroes of Precinct 1, which I love that card.
Yeah, that has a lot.
I really do.
That had a lot of synergy with just, I mean, every friggin' spell in that deck is multicolored, so you're getting 1/1s everywhere.
Yes, it was really, you know. Oh, Brian Little is saying, what's up, guys? So
hey, hey. But here's the thing at the end of the day. Mono Red took number one, number two, and number three at this tournament.
Yeah. It's weird because it wasn't like a variant. It's not like, I mean, I think Will was playing a version of that with what's her face?
Chandra. Well, there were three versions of the deck floating around.
Right.
And I think, ironically, I think there was one version of each of them are the ones that made the top eight. There was one version that plays Experimental Frenzy. There's one version that plays Chandra, and there's one version that plays Risk Factor.
And well, it looks like they all played Risk Factor.
Yeah,
it's
but one
just
of them
the levels of Risk Factor.
One of them I think was running the full four.
Yeah.
And that deck actually was built to with Esper Control in mind because Risk Factor against Esper Control is just devastating. If Esper Control isn't already in control of the game, Risk Factor just gives Mono Red just that leap that they need to sort of go over the top. Chandra was actually a very good card in the Mono Red deck as well because, you know, normally when you play a Planeswalker, what do? If you're the opponent, you attack it.
Right.
You can't do that with Chandra because if she takes damage, you're taking damage.
Yeah.
Because when she takes damage, loyalty counters are removed, and that triggers her static ability, which deals damage to you. So, you know, basically what they do is they sit there with the Chandra, say, go ahead, attack it, I don't care. I'm going to burn you anyway. I'll take a few more free damage. It makes my job easier. They take it up to 7. Ultimate, they, you know, you take 7 damage. They get 7 cards. I mean, come on, you lose the game.
Yeah, totally. And Brian, in answer to your question, for those of you listening to the audio podcast later, Brian, one of our listeners, listened to the live show, come on out. He asked, since he's a first-timer here, what is our show about? We talk about Magic the Gathering Standard Edition, which is, there's a couple of flavors of Magic. It's the card game, trading card game. So we kind of tear apart from a casual perspective. We're not pros. Neither one of us have pro points, although you might after next weekend, buddy.
Not next weekend, June, beginning of June.
Yeah. No. Next weekend will be Star City points. But, you know, so we talk about that. So we're glad you're here. We're glad you found us.
Welcome.
But back to it. Yeah. The red deck, I mean, the red deck is not, it's kind of funny. Here's what's going to, you know what's going to happen is like, yes, this week is mono red. And then next week, everybody will play against it. Mm. It's like Mono Blue was for last season, where the first week in Ravnica Allegiance was Mono Blue, Mono Blue, Mono Blue, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, "Wait, we can counter this."
Yeah, and Mono Blue's gone. There were two mono blue decks that made day two.
They were all, and I already tore it apart in my deck.
Yeah, there's like 100.
I needed the deck box.
116 people made day two at this tournament. Two of them made it with mono blue. Although here's the thing, one player made day two with Celestnia tokens, and they made the top eight. So, you know.
Yeah, he. Well, I mean, as I understand it, he's really the only one, and is Zachary Kiln is pretty much Zach. He's like the only one who can play it. Like everybody else has tried, and like they gave up on it. Mm-hmm. This guy makes it look easy, I guess. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, it was a very good tournament. I think it reinforces the fact that Standard is actually a very healthy format. There were some off the wall decks that were out there.
I think Bant Midrange is going to be a thing.
Bant Midrange is a thing, I think. And they tried making it a thing during Ravnica Allegiance. It was missing a couple of pieces, but now it's, I think, yeah, I think this is a deck that's going to be sticking around for a while.
Well, it needed Vivian. Vivian in that deck.
Vivian's awesome.
It's what makes that deck operate. Mm. And the God Eternal Aketra, which he makes everything operate.
Yeah. And then, did you see that one guy? Oh, I don't even remember what his name was. I'm not sure if he made day two. But he walked into this tournament with a Planeswalker prison deck.
Yeah, the 13...
18 Planeswalkers in his deck.
Yeah, I heard about that. I'm trying to find the deck list for it, because it was...
They did a deck tech on it during the tournament. It's Azorius Super Friends.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's got... The deck list isn't up on the link that's here, but
I actually saw it in play though. I mean, it plays horrible. I mean, it just it could go horribly wrong, and yet because nobody was prepared for it, he did pretty well. I think he got to day two.
That's what I'm checking to see if he did. I don't know if he made day two. I know that when they interviewed him, he was 3-0, which is, you know, obviously way too early for. To know whether or not you're going to make day two, although 6-3 made day two at this event, which was pretty good for folks if they didn't have the greatest start to their day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like when they were talking to him, he's like, I really hope someone plays Nexus against me because it just destroys Nexus decks. Speaking of Nexus,
yes,
back again, but it was the most played deck of the tournament. Had the largest metagame share going into day two.
Yep, but I mean it did really well day one.
It did. Like, it did pretty well day one, but it didn't have a good conversion rate, and so it was kind of a disappointment. And the best finish for the deck was ninth place, which isn't bad. You know, you miss the top eight, you end up being a bridesmaid, not a bride. But I think overall it was kind of a disappointing weekend for Simic Nexus. That was the boogeyman going into the weekend. People were terrified of this deck because of Tamiyo.
Well, that's the thing is that I think what we're gonna find with that. Is that because Bant Midrange is going to be, you know, is a thing, mm-hmm. I think you're going to find that people are going to jam Bant Nexus. I think it needs the white. And first of all, though, and I think you and I were talking about this earlier today, my feeling on Simic Nexus, what it was really missing was by pulling all the creatures out, they pulled all of the Hydroids out, which you need to, you don't really have, other than Tamiyo, you don't have a finisher. Like, you don't have a way to put this game away other than I'm going to take all the turns from now until eternity.
Well, they did have finisher. I think what because they were talking
about
this.
What, Blast Zone?
No, it wasn't Blast Zone. They were talking about this during the tournament, saying that it was ironic that not ironic, but it was weird that a card as powerful as Hydroid Krasis wasn't in Simic Nexus anymore. And they said the reason that it wasn't it was because it was a card that they needed to have in, but they didn't necessarily want it in the deck because it sort of was counterintuitive to what you were doing. Because all the Reclamation decks exist during their end step where you have to tap out with Hydroid Krasis in order to make it effective. So what they did was they yanked all those out, put in the Tamiyos, but they basically sort of streamlined the deck to really focus in on the combo. And their win condition was actually Callous Dismissal, a common from War of the Spark. Which is sorcery for one and a blue, return a target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, and amass one. So what they do is they start taking a bajillion turns. They eventually get to the point where Tamiyo finds...
Could start jamming.
Either finds the Callous Dismissal or returns it from your graveyard. and you just start bouncing all their permanents, making your little amass token bigger and bigger and bigger, and you could eventually just kill them in one swing. It's just you have to go through the motions for 15, 16, 17 extra turns, unless your opponent decides, okay, I can see the loop has been established, GG, let's go on to the next game.
Right. I think that... See, I kind of disagree with the Callous Dismissal. I think that that's why that deck... I think the person who finds a way to either put the Hydroid or the other Hydra in there, I think it just needs something...
Well, actually, I actually think that it's perfect for the deck.
Okay.
And here's the reason why. It's basically because, all right, you use the Callous Dismissal, goes in your graveyard, whatever. The fact that they can get it back as many times as they can, and it only costs 2 mana to get the effect down... It's just it's a lot more efficient use of your mana for a reclamation deck, because you want to keep your mana open to do other things during your turn until you can start firing off, you know, as Ascanta Searches and Wilderness Reclamations. So, like I said, it was a disappointing finish for the deck, but I think, you know, I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's still going to be a deck going forward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at this, and I think what it I think they're going to find a way to put. I'd like to see him make Bant work again. Like, I think there's a way.
There's probably a way.
You know, and to get some of the... Because white has some of the better, you know... Better creatures, better, you know...
Yeah, but I don't think you're not going to see too many creatures in Bant decks anymore. Because I think the biggest reason for that is that... Game one against like Esper Control or Mono Red or other decks like that, you blank all their removal game one. You know?
That's true.
You don't have to worry about them taking, killing your Hydroid Krasis, and that's your win condition. Whereas, you know, Callous Dismissal, they kill it. Well, it's a sorcery. I'm just gonna, you know, Tamiyo, get it back.
I agree with that. I mean, and the thing about the sorcery is that it does also, you know, whereas they can exile the Krasis, and if you exile two of them, an expert can absolutely do that. Mm-hmm. Even with just Cry of the Carnarium and, you know, something else, just Mortify and Carnarium if they have to in late game. You know, I get that. It just seems like it does need to be faster. Like, I was watching it play the red deck, and I mean,
it's not a fast deck by any means. This deck basically is grinding you into submission at this point. It's no longer this, I've established control, let me kill you quickly. It's, I've established control... And now it's time for the Chinese water torture. How long are you going to last, pal? But here's the thing, too. Callous Dismissal dodges Thief of Sanity. It dodges Hostage Taker. Because what's the worst thing in the world if you're a Nexus player? Oh, crap. He stole my Krasis, and now he's just cast it against me. I have no way to stop this card.
Right. Or my Nexus of Fate, or my... Yeah.
Yeah. At least, you know, okay, you cast the Callous Dismissal, you bounce something to mine. Well, it's back in my graveyard now. Thanks. Yeah. Now Tamiyo's going to give it back to me, and I'm going to bounce your stupid Thief and start taking extra turns.
Exactly. I was watching a little bit too with Sultai Midrange. I'm thinking about messing around with Citadel of Bolas in a Sultai Midrange deck. That seems busted, broken.
Yeah, MTG Goldfish just posted an article about a Sultai Citadel deck.
They did a Golgari, I think.
Was it Golgari?
It was Golgari.
Well, yeah, but
I was looking at it going, you know what? Instead of just going Golgari, like, to be able to have the Krasis and to be able to have Tamiyo, you know, it's a six drop. That's the problem. Mm. But
ramp. You're playing green. Ramp it up.
You're playing green. You can ramp. I mean, it just, Wild Growth Walker with all the explore mechanics is, it's a little bit ridiculous.
Well, I mean, especially since, you know, once you have the Citadel out, an explore creature becomes, you know, 3 to 6 mana, essentially.
Yeah. Well, not just that. It's like, if I have Wild Growth out and if I pull Jade Light, 6 life. It paid for itself.
Well, yeah, it's 6 mana. And then plus 2, if you explore twice and there's 2 lands on the top, those are 2 lands you wouldn't have been able to play with a Citadel.
Right.
So, yeah, no, it's. I think it's a viable strategy. The hard part is going to be resolving a 6 drop in Standard.
Yes, that's hard. I totally agree with that.
That's hard to do.
It really, and especially in this control-heavy thing. I mean, one of the things we should definitely talk about is something that was missing that we thought would be there. You know, what you did not see, at least in the Open. Now, it was in the Classic, but there ain't no Grixis.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's see. There was one Grixis control deck that made Day 2. There was no Grixis mid-range.
No.
That is a huge surprise.
It is and it isn't. I think that, and it's unfortunate because I think as time goes on and people get more comfortable playing him, I think the bolus 3-black mana cost scares a lot of people. They're like, oh, God, I'm playing 3 colors and I have a 3, you know, mana fix and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the mana's base for Grixis control or even Grixis midrange, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, the mana in standard is as close to perfect as it's going to get. I mean,
yeah.
Because people already play Esper with no problem. I mean, they play 2 basic lands in their deck. I mean, like, I'm surprised Field of Ruin hasn't been played more, but...
I am too, actually. I think it's because of the basic land, and which is funny because, you know, you should be running a basic land if you have Field of Ruin so that you have something to search for, but... Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm just looking at it, and I'm like, the Grixis control deck by Chris Johnson, which he used yesterday, and I mean, he won the classic with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, but he jammed. You know, I heard it best today on another podcast. They were like, it's not Grixis control. It's actually Nicol Bolas Tribal. It's you know, he's running 8 Nicol Bolas between the Ravager and Dragon God,
right.
2 Lilianas, Ugin and Narset. And Narset is kind of the sleeper of this set. You have blue, you're playing Narset.
Yeah, Narset's some good stuff right there. I mean, that actually kind of brings us over to, I think, a little combat phase, doesn't it?
Well, it can, but I wasn't ready for it. Well, yes, it absolutely could.
Because, I mean, come on, we're talking about it.
Combat phase.
Hey, you let us here, man. You go ahead.
All right. Well, so we just, you know, we've been talking about SCG Richmond. We've been talking about what's been good, what hasn't been good, what's, you know, how the metagame's shaping up. There was a lot of hype coming into this weekend as to what decks were going to be good, what cards were going to be, you know, the engines behind all these new decks that were supposed to be coming out. So, Benson, in your opinion, what cards coming into this weekend, now that we've seen the results... What was overrated? What was underrated, in your opinion?
Well, if we're looking strictly at the standard classic,
well, the Open. The Open was the bigger tournament.
Yeah, if we're looking at the Open, then my thought would be, first of all, the fact that Grixis wasn't there. So yeah, you got to go with Bolas.
Yeah,
obviously. The other one that I thought would really be big and no one is playing, I didn't see it at all. And I don't understand this with this new standard. How did nobody jam Elder Spell?
True.
You know, like, nobody's playing Elder Spell. And Elder Spell, to me, is one of those cards that's format changing. Now, I understand it, but it's not even in sideboards.
Yeah,
it's... Like, I would have been like, I get it not being in your main deck, but... You should be sideboarding this if you have black. How do you not have this have a spot? It, like, removes everything.
Yeah. The only thing that I could think of is... And I'm having a hard time coming up with a reason. It's such a silver bullet, and I think people are still looking at it as a combo piece with another Planeswalker to say, okay, I've killed yours, let me ultimate mine.
Right.
If they're just looking at it as a 2-mana destroy any number of Planeswalker thing, I mean... Okay, against Esper, you're going to have a hard time resolving that spell.
Right.
That's just that you're going to have a hard time resolving anything against Esper control, especially if they drop Teferi, because they can just sit back on not even a Dovin's Veto, regular negate, and just be like, well, you're playing everything at sorcery speed, so do your worst.
Right.
But yeah, it's. I would say it was definitely the Grixis elements. I think were definitely overrated going in. I think I can agree with you on that.
And I don't think it's going to stay that way. I think people are still trying to noodle out the best, you know, combo for that. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, aggro is an easy week one of standard deck.
Especially mono red.
Right. It's the way you roll. It's easy mana base, easy everything.
Yeah, it doesn't get much easier than throwing 18 to 20 mountains in a deck and turning creatures sideways and burning your opponent's face.
Exactly. And so I get that. But I did think that we would see some things like Elder Spell. I mean, so I do think that's underrated. As far as overrated, I'm going to go with, honestly, Teferi Time Raveler.
So you don't think that was as good as people were saying it was going to be?
I'm saying it was, I think it's a good card. I don't think they found the right use for it. It seemed to be in a lot of sideboards, where I would see jamming that in main deck for Esper especially. Mm-hmm. But if you're playing blue-white at all, you know, how is that not, how do you not have two in the main deck?
I think it's because it's competing with a card that was underrated going into the tournament, which sort of segues into what I was thinking, Narset.
True.
Narset, there were some people saying this card is actually really, really good, but for the most part, you know, you didn't really hear too many people talking about Narset, Parter of Veils, and looking at how the tournament played out, it's Azcanta on a stick. It gives you extra activations of Azcanta for no mana, and one of the things that it's good in a Simic Nexus deck, because what it does is, all right, you flip over the top four cards, or put it, that's Tamiyo, but in Esper, it just, you know, it gives you an extra activation for free. You know, you untap with this, you can activate it, pop up a absorb, a negate, and you shut off your opponent's card draw. I mean, it gives you such a chance to get ahead after having tapped out for a 3-mana planeswalker, whereas Teferi doesn't necessarily do that. I still think it can fit in the main deck of certain Esper decks. I don't know. It's interesting. But Narset was definitely underrated.
I agree with you there too. It's because of, and I think about rotation coming up in 4 months. It's like once Azcanta rotates out, you'll jam four of this in every deck.
Narset's going to be everywhere.
Yeah, because it will fit, unless for some reason they reprint it in Core 20, which I don't think they will.
They won't, because it's a transforming card. They're not going to do that. Well, here's the thing. You're probably not going to see four. You'll probably see two, because two seems to be the magic number for Search for Azcanta. And since this costs an extra mana, I can't see playing three or four, just because, you know, if you draw three in your hand, you can activate it twice, and it's sitting there with one loyalty counter just kind of staring at you.
Right. I don't disagree. And I mean, a card I think also that nobody was really hip on until they saw it in action, Dreadhorde Arcanist. I mean, that Boros Feather deck, that's going to be another one. Bant midrange and Boros Feather, those are going to be decks. Somebody's going to break the code on those, and you're going to see them everywhere, because that is a very combo-specific, and it's not stable yet. It's not consistent.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's the biggest thing, because I was watching that deck when they were playing, and I was keeping my eye on it, because I had seen it on Arena a couple times, and it destroyed me the couple times that I played it.
Right.
But if it doesn't get Feather, it doesn't really do much.
And I think when you get the London Mulligan in as full-time, it will be... I mean, that might be as simple as that.
Yeah.
But... I mean, Dreadhorde Arcanist was the one that people talked about, Feather, and 10th District Legionnaire, and blah, blah, blah. But really, without Dreadhorde Arcanist in that, you don't have it. Like, that's just one of those cards for a 2-drop that, you know, you can cast a target instant or sorcery with converted mana cost. I mean, come on.
I would say the Feather deck, that is definitely the deck in the format that has the most potential, because
it really does.
The raw explosiveness that you can get, if you play a turn 3 Feather and you can protect it and untap with it, I mean, it's just the amount of damage you can just pull out of nowhere is crazy, and you keep getting those cards back, and it's ridiculous. You're like, oh, indestructible, scry one.
Yep.
Oh, first strike, draw a card. Oh, +2/+1 haste, draw a card. Oh, by the way, this all goes back into my hand at the end of the turn. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I mean, it definitely has the absolute most upside out of anything else.
They just got to find a way to consistently get Feather into play. I mean, like you say, it may be as simple as the London Mulligan.
Yes. I mean, I definitely want to see, you know... That another card I think that was overhyped that hasn't been used yet and might be next week when they go to Syracuse, because I think you got to jam it in Gruul, obviously. Ilharg. Like, he wasn't anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I think... I'm not sure Well, there were 6 Gruul aggro decks that made day 2. So it's there. So they had a decent performance. I don't know how many.
But it wasn't in there. It wasn't in any of those decks.
Gruul wasn't in any of those?
No, Ilharg. Ilharg. It was not in any of the Gruul decks.
There's got to be a reason. There's got to be a reason that they saw, because I'm sure people have been testing this format for weeks already. There's got to be a reason that Ilharg didn't show up. Maybe just the potential for blowouts was too big, but I don't know. Yeah, it's,
well,
it,
I mean,
it is a bit of a
surprise.
It's hard
for me to imagine, because, I mean, that seems like the kind of card you would want to get out there and just to get, like, Galta.
Or, I guess,
you know, like,
I guess because it's so dependent on having specific other huge creatures in your hand.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, 6/6 trample for 5 is already really good, but I guess the fact that you need to have Rhonas, you need to have Galta, you need to have Carnage Tyrant in your hand when you attack, when you may as well just cast the creature since it goes back into your hand.
Right.
I don't know. There's got to be something that we're missing, you know, because we're not the pros. There's got to be something that
right.
we're missing that they tried it and they're like, it's just not there.
I don't know. I think they're going to break that code. He's too. The upside on that, the ability to bring out these big monsters was, yeah.
And I think too the fact that you didn't quite see as many Lilianas as I thought you would.
I think the 6 casting cost is why she's your finisher. You don't bring her out.
But not every Esper deck was playing her either. You know, it was a couple that were. There were some that weren't, depending on how they wanted to get things built. I mean, some people were playing Ugin. There were several Esper decks that were playing Ugin. So
yes,
kudos to that. I mean, I'll say this: Wizards, they knocked this set out of the park. The power level is definitely there. There are so many good cards that have shown up. There's, I'm sure, so much untapped potential. I think it's just we're going to need a couple more weeks for the metagame to settle down. Hopefully it settles down enough for Syracuse when I bring my deck.
So you're totally, I mean, we shouldn't, well, come on, we're not famous by any stretch. I doubt anybody's listening, but you're going Esper?
Yeah, I'm building Esper for the tournament.
Okay.
The question is going to be what list Flavor. Do I go with? And I'm having a hard time because there's, you know, there were like 3 or 4 different Esper decks in the top 25, and they're all built differently. There's no, like, some of the standard core is there, but the little individual choices, I'm not sure why they made those decisions, so I'm not sure I want to commit to purchasing singles if I'm not sure that's the best option. I mean, I'd love to get, you know, to jam Liliana in the deck, but I also think Ugin's a good choice. You know, do I play...
You already have an Ugin.
I have Ugins. I don't have any Lilianas. You know,
right.
do I play...
I have 2. I mean, we could talk offline. If you got
do
a
have, you know, do I play Narset? Do I play Teferi in the main? You know, how many Planeswalkers total do I play? What does the removal suite look like? There's a lot of decisions that go into this, and this is a big tournament. So
right.
I want to make sure I'm as prepared as possible. So I'm having a hard time settling on a list.
Just go with Simic Nexus.
And no. I don't want to have to play basic mountains in my deck because you can't play with the foils.
Oh, that's right. It's SCG. They don't let you play with the...
Well, you can't.
Unless you could foil your whole deck.
Yeah, you can't. Well, I mean, I saw there was one of the Esper Control players didn't have... their entire deck wasn't foiled, but I think it's just, you know, certain like if the card... It's more likely that the card will bend, and if it's an integral card to your deck, they're like, okay, well... We can't let you know that the card is there, so let's just
right.
swap them out. And I understand that. I'm totally fine with that. But yeah, I'm playing Esper, just not quite sure what flavor.
Well, whatever you do, man, whatever you do, don't mark the backs of the cards.
Too soon.
Too soon. Sorry.
It's manufacturer's defect. I'll have you know.
is that the official ruling? Is that what they called it?
No. They said there was no way that it could have been anything other than intentional, basically.
But nothing's happened to him yet. They haven't bounced him from the NPL.
They're still involved. I don't know if that's a big enough offense to boot you from the professional league. I mean, that would be like...
They absolutely should boot you from the professional league. If he's found to be cheating, I'm sorry, you're supposed to be held to a higher standard. You're
well, yeah, but
league.
you can be suspended, not expelled.
You should be expelled. I disagree wholeheartedly. If he's found to have officially cheated... Okay, without a shadow of a doubt, you make a statement. You say, we will not tolerate cheating, paper or not. And yeah, an arena, you can't cheat. Of course not. But you know what? It's a principle. there's a certain level of, you are expected, you know, I mean, listen, Pete Rose, who belongs in the freaking Hall of Fame for baseball, can't be in the Hall of Fame because he not only cheated, gambled, and I mean, you know, they smacked him around.
Yeah, but know? I mean, you look at, like, you know, performance enhancing drugs and things like that. They're cheaters. They get, you know, they get hefty suspensions. You well, know, 80 because, games, 100 games, but they're allowed to come back.
Because what they're not saying is that everybody's on performance-enhancing drugs. And if everybody's on it, who cares? But, I mean, it's like, this is one of those things where if the MPL really wants to be taken seriously, I think you have to take a zero tolerance on this and say, look, you get caught cheating at a paper event where, you know, you are risking your $75,000 paycheck. You know, do this. You do this, and we catch you. And because you're MPL, we are definitely going to watch you closer, because it does. It casts a shadow over their whole league.
But at the same time, I'm not like justifying what he did. I'm not excusing what he did. What he did was inexcusable. But right. At the same time, we're not
allegedly.
We're not. Well, we're not Yuya Watanabe. We're not professionals. We don't have the kind of pressure that he has to perform and maintain that high level. He had been a great ambassador to the game up until this point.
Right.
People do make mistakes.
So wait a second. What you're saying is, if you have high pressure, it's okay to cheat?
No, not at all. I like I said, I'm not saying what he did was okay at all. I'm just saying that I can understand where he might have a moment of weakness and say, well, I have to make sure I win this tournament to keep my prestige level high. I have to make sure that I live up to these expectations. Maybe if I'm careful, they won't see it. And he messed up.
Yeah,
I don't know if that means okay. You can never. You're out of the MPL forever. I don't know if that's. I don't know if you want to go that severe that fast. I think a suspension is definitely, I would say, warranted. I mean, kick him out for a year, but let him come back in if he proves himself.
Well, no, because every year they decide who's in. So I mean, if he's out, he's going to be out anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
but he has to earn his way back in at that point, literally by winning tournaments.
I'm not saying take away the guy's Hall of Fame, and which is probably hypocritical as hell. Because you got found cheating, and yet, you know, you're still in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
No, I guess you got to take that away, too. I mean, because that's just it. Like, with somebody like him, like, if you and I got caught cheating, okay, we're at an event and say, okay, I really want to do something, so, okay, I'm going to mark my cards with some, you know, not that I ever would. But it's a different thing for us. You know, he's in the Hall of Fame. It costs into question his entire career.
No, yeah.
What if
absolutely.
He got in the Hall of Fame because he was cheating?
No, that's you're absolutely right. I'm not disagreeing with you on that point at all. I just don't think that, you know, permanent banishment, it solves the problem either. It's certainly a deterrent for other people, but I do believe that, you know, people make mistakes, but that they, you know, depending on the situation, they may also get, you know, they may also earn themselves a second chance after a certain amount of time has passed. Like I said, hefty suspension. You're out of the MPL. You can't come back for X number of years, but if you perform well, and obviously he'd be under a much bigger microscope having been caught cheating. If he's able to continually perform at a high level and it's on the up and up, there's no reason that he shouldn't be able to come back into the league at some point later on in the future.
Could you imagine if they're like, okay, here's the deal. We're gonna, you know, you've got a year suspension from MPL and from any Magic events. When you come back, if you don't top eight, at least 50% of your things or whatever you were doing before, we're going to take away the Hall of Fame.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Do like what they do in other professional sports leagues, where if you're caught cheating, you're subject to more quote unquote random tests. So, you know, you deck check them three times every tournament.
Yeah.
You know, it just means you've got that scarlet letter on your head for a while. All right, you're at this high profile tournament. Because think about this too, he lost a lot of money getting DQ'd anyway, because he was in the top eight of that Mythic Championship, so he was guaranteed like, you know, 10 grand at the least.
And I mean, he got nothing.
He got zip
being DQ'd.
No Planeswalker. No points. No Mythic points. No money. He got all the way down to last place, like he never even played. And you know, that already hurts him a lot, and his reputation has been tarnished greatly. So okay. You're suspended for X amount of time. When you come back, every X number of rounds at a time of our choosing, we're going to deck check you for the next 6 months or however long we decide is necessary until we know that you're not cheating anymore. Is that a little harsh? Maybe, but it does give him a chance, a path to redemption if he wants that. Not like, right. you know, not like Owen Turtenwald or anything.
Well, he doesn't deserve it. Owen Turtenwald's a completely different thing. If the rumors on him are true, 100% completely different thing.
Yeah.
Like, there, you got to have no, you know. But, yeah, anyway, this combat kind of went a different way.
It did, but hey, it stayed in combat.
It stayed in combat. So, you know, but let's, on that one, I mean, let's.
Main phase.
All right, let's get back to main phase here, because I do want to keep talking about standard, because, I mean, standard's really good again. I mean, not that it was bad.
No, it's been great. It's even better.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, I mean, it was getting, we were getting a little close to the Amon-Ket Hours of Devastation standard when it was mono red and blue, or mono red and mono black, or mono red and black, whatever. But you know, everybody had to play that to even be competitive. It was getting to the point with Esper Control that it was pretty much that.
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah.
Really.
I think you know, Esper is established. It is one of the top decks to beat. But there's several top decks to beat. Whereas and during that standard, it was mono friggin' red.
Yeah, you had mono red.
Red in six of the top eight. You know, consistently, where it was always okay. Mono red against mono red mirror match. Every damn round when you're watching coverage. So
yeah, well, that's because they took Team Energy away from us.
Well, yeah, but that was that deck was a mistake.
That was busted.
But this past standard format was extremely healthy. This new one is looking to be fairly healthy as well. Whether or not it's more or less, it still remains to be seen. But there's definitely a lot more wrinkles than there were, which is great. I love it.
So then the question becomes, what do you think people should be playing now?
Esper.
You know what? Stop it with the whole Esper thing. We get it. You love Esper. We get it. You and Esper are going to go get married. We understand.
I don't live in a polygamous state, so I can't do that.
Yeah, well.
So, what you should play in standard? Cop-out answer. Whatever you like having fun with. Real answer. I would probably stay away from mono-red right now. Only because there's no guarantee that the success is going to last. But if you do decide to play a mono red, it's a fairly cheap deck to build. So if you're just getting into standard, sleeve up mono red. You can't go wrong with that.
I disagree. I think mono red is 100% a flash in the pan. It was not hanging before.
It never really went away. I mean, it's always been.
It didn't
been
go away, but it wasn't competitive by any stretch.
Yeah.
It was in top. It might be one in top. At one point, it was one in the top 15.
Yeah, but that's like, still, it's not a bad day.
It's not a bad day, but it's definitely. What it was. But when it was. It's not just the fact that it was one in the top 15, but that there were a lot of people playing it. It could not hang.
It's got bad matchups now. It does have a lot of bad matchups now. But I think as a jumping point, especially with where the metagame is right now, it's not a bad idea to play it because people are still figuring out the other decks, even though they're still strong. Like, Esper had a much stronger performance than you would normally expect it to the first tournament out of the gates of the new format. But you still have a good shot against Esper with Mono Red because you can just flat steal games because you just have so much latent damage floating around. Selesnya tokens. I mean, if you want to get crazy, I don't know.
No, I would disagree with that wholeheartedly. That deck is, again, that's a Zachary Kiln thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see too many other people playing it because it is not consistent. He found a way to make it consistent, you know, and to make it work for him. But I mean, I saw him play it, and a few of the things he did, I was like, why is he doing it that way? And I thought that because guess what? I don't understand how to play Selesnya freaking tokens. You know, and I don't think a lot. I think there's a lot of subtlety to that. If you enjoy playing that type of thing, that's fine. But there are other decks that can go wide. Mm. You know, a white mono white can go wide.
Yeah,
and be a lot more. Yeah, Azorius, and they could be, and they're a lot more stable and consistent. Mm. Really,
you could go Boros and try your hand at the Feather deck. I don't think Feather is super expensive right now.
It's not, and the combo is pretty easy.
Yeah, a lot of jank draft commons.
Yeah, it's really kind of it's a combo deck. There's no way around it. You know, so if you're not a combo player, then that's not, you know, that may not be the deck for you. I'm liking, as far as just, you know, old school creature magic, Bant Midrange. I like this deck. I'm probably going to build it. Like, it just, it's a creature heavy deck, 29 creatures in the deck, 7 planeswalkers, no other spells. Yeah. Like, it's you get your you get your counter spells off of Frilled Mystic.
It's an expensive deck, though.
It really is. It's 423 right now. Well, it's because of the Krasis and the God Eternal.
Yeah, 4 Krasis, 3 God Eternals. The Growth Chamber Guardian is not necessarily a cheap card. Shalai, I mean, Teferi's.
Yeah, the Time Raveler.
And
so
then,
it's
you
not
know,
the
here's,
Shocks.
Yeah, here's the one bad thing about Standard right now is that unless you're playing a deck like Mono Red, you're going to need to get yourself a bunch of shock lands. So that's going to set you back a little bit if you don't already have them.
But luckily, I think by this point, people should have them.
If they should.
Playing,
and,
if you've been playing for a while.
Yeah, like, and they're not super expensive. I mean, I think the most valuable shock land, I think, is Steam Vents. And I think that's like $12.
Yep.
Which is, okay. It's not the cheapest card in the world, but the shock lands are a great investment because once you buy them, they rotate out of the Standard in a year. They're going to be playable in Modern. They always see play in Modern. They're the best dual lands printed since the dual lands.
Yeah, and in, Commander and all that.
Yeah,
but
in every other format. They're going to see play.
You know what you didn't see? You didn't see, is it? Nobody had Phoenix.
Nobody had, well, it wasn't Phoenix. Like, I think people are trying to break the Rawl combo. I think that's what people are trying to do.
Yeah, that's what I should have meant. I meant to say the is it Rawl. Yeah. I think that could be, that could sneak up on us. It's just going to need one good week.
Mm-hmm. People were playing it. I don't know. Let's see if any of them made day two. I'm looking real quick while you're talking. Nope.
Well, I bet you the place to check for that would be the Standard Classic. Like, that seems to be, like, if you look at the Standard Classic, the top 10 was Grixis Control, Bant Nexus. Bant Nexus is back. Look at that.
Yeah,
Grixis Bant Control, Esper Control, Azorius Aggro, Dimir Control, which is a thing again, Mardu Aggro, Naya Aggro, Esper Control, and Bant Nexus. Like, it just... Celestia Explorer? Huh.
Uh-oh.
That's interesting.
Uh-oh.
I'm taking a look at that right now. Knight of Autumn, Resplendent Angel, Shalai, God Eternal Locatcher. That would be the reason to play it.
Oh,
and Lyra.
Is that Celestia Angels?
Celestia? It's called Celestia Explorer. It also has the Branchwalker, Wild Growth, and Jade Lights.
I'm not seeing that one.
I'm looking at the open.
Oh, you're at the open. Okay, I was at the classic.
Oh, that's what I mean, the classic. Sorry. It was number 12.
That's, yeah, Celestia Angels.
It says Celestia Explorer.
Oh, well, I'm looking at Angels.
Oh. This says Explore here, so.
I don't know.
I'm looking on MTG Goldfish. What are you looking on?
Star City Games.
Well, that's because you're weird.
Well.
Because, but I'm looking at this deck with, like, Branchwalker, Wild Growth, and Jade Light. It's an interesting...
Yeah, it's the Explore package plus Angels plus Oketra.
Yeah,
which
and
if
Gideon.
If you're playing white and you're playing creatures, Oketra better be in your deck. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Because the white, yeah. I thought about putting it in my little white aggro deck. It's just, it's such a high casting cost.
Five is the top, definitely top end.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on. You untap with that thing?
Yeah, you're insane. You're
yikes. And it's not like they can kill it. Once it's in play, it's not like it's going anywhere.
That's true.
Oh, Prison Realm. Okay, I'll draw it in 3 turns. Oh, Time Wipe. I'll draw it in 3 turns. What are you doing?
Ixalan's Binding.
Yeah, no.
Draw it in 3 turns.
Yeah, and then you can still cast it because guess what? There's nothing exiled under there anymore.
It's kind of great, actually. I was like, that's a good ruling.
If they don't mill it, if they don't steal it, if they don't counter it, you are not killing it.
Yeah, the trick is you have to be able to. And I mean, Esper has some of that. The one counterspell there that lets you then, I'm going to counter that spell, mill 3 cards.
Yeah, if it's in the top 3 at that point, so if you could Thought Collapse them. But I mean, also too, Esper just tears apart your hand with Thought Erasers anyway.
Yeah, totally.
So I think Thought Erasure is actually one of the most played cards in the tournament.
It was.
Between the Esper midrange, the Esper control, and yeah.
Yeah, it's... I'm definitely... Esper's got... It's Esper's holding out over Grixis still.
Yeah, Esper's still the king of the control hill.
Grixis will come on, though.
I'm sure it will. I don't see Grixis being held down for long because just the power level of those cards, there's got to be a deck there. there's no reason not to think there's not a deck there. I mean, it's just there's so much good stuff there, and there's nothing wrong with playing multiple copies of Nicol Bolas.
Right. I think it could. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, and maybe this is the combat for next week. I mean, is Grixis the reclamation of this set?
No.
Where everybody's like, reclamation, there's a use for it. There's a use for it. And no one can crack that code.
I think the difference is with Grixis is that I think it's just it's finding the right build. With reclamation, it's just, this card is broken. How is it not breaking the format?
Right.
I think this version of the Simic Nexus deck is the best version that's out there now. This
right.
might be the best version of the deck that we'll see. It's still not as crazy as I thought it was going to be, which I think is going to make it the most overrated standard card printed in the last few years. But I am certainly not denying the power that it has.
I don't disagree. It's got... I don't know. Like I said, I think Bant may be a little bit more... Simic has it, but I still feel like it's missing something.
Yeah, that's why I held on to Bant. That's why I held on to playing Bant as long as I did before
yeah.
I switched over to Esper Control, because I was like, you need the white for the board wipes. I mean, right now is a great time to play Settle the Wreckage. Nobody expects Settle the Wreckage right now.
Right.
It's the frickin' Spanish Inquisition. Nobody's expecting it.
Oh, God, I wish I had that freaking bump. I got to get that. But you're not wrong. It's just, you know, and I wonder if Bant Nexus can make a comeback. I got to be honest with you. There's a part of me, Perez, that wants to tell you to build Bant and take that. Because I think you're going to see a lot of Esper Control in Syracuse. You roll in with a Bant deck, you could roll in with a Bant deck.
Here's the thing. I want to be able to, like, go to the bathroom between rounds. I don't know if any of you guys saw this. You were watching some coverage over the weekend, right?
Oh yeah.
There was a guy playing Simic Nexus, and I think he was playing against he might have been playing against Mono Red or it might have even been Sultai Midrange.
Right.
Simic player starts going off. Opponent leaves. He gets up and walks away. Tells the judge, sit down and make sure he doesn't do anything fishy. I'm gonna go to the bathroom. He leaves for like 10 minutes. I swear to God. He just, like, he F6'd. I'm like, I'm okay, pass, you do whatever you want. Because the guy had, like, six extra turns banked. He was just digging for his callous dismissal. Wasn't finding it. So he's like, I got stuff to do. I'll be back in a little bit. Judge, sit here. And he did. The judge sat there and just, you know, kept track of stuff for him. And doopy-doopy-doo. Guy's just taking extra turns. Player eventually comes back. This was game one of the match, by the way. And the commentators are like, what is he doing? There's no benefit for him doing this. What if he wins game two? He's not going to have time to finish the match. It was Mono Red, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
So game one takes like 20 minutes because the dude leaves and doesn't scoop, because the Nexus player did not give him another turn. He just took all the turns and killed him. And he eventually shook hands and scooped up for game two. Red player did win game two, but Nexus player made, you know, Karma came back and bit him in the butt, and he just crushed him game three. So it was so funny, because they're like, wait, did he leave? Where did he go?
Well, it's arrogant as hell. It really is.
Yeah, there's no... If the guy's... And the guy even demonstrated, look, this is what I'm doing. I'm bouncing this card. I'm recasting it. I have multiple Tameos in my hand to be able to plus and minus Tameo to get Nexus back, to get all these other cards back that I need to continue this combo. There's nothing you can do to stop me. And he's basically like, no, I'm going to make you beat me. You know what? Actually, I got to go. Why? Just scoop. Go... Move on, go to game two. You have a better chance of winning the match after sideboarding. Just do that. I don't understand why he did that. And it ended up biting him in the butt. He lost the match.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with Arena. I think, too, I mean, we can go into that at some point, but how Arena has changed the culture. But I think some people, you know, because when you play Arena now on, if you play Nexus now on Arena and play against it, it's frustrating, and you start, you know, F6ing and just, you know, blah, 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 you know, what are you going to do? And you let it go to the thing, and then you make a play at the last second.
You're roping him? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of turning people into a bit of douches, really.
Yeah, okay.
So,
life advice for everybody listening to the podcast, if you're playing against Nexus and they have the loop, unless you really think they're going to screw up somewhere, you're probably better off just conceding. and just move on to the next game. You know, if you're playing on Arena and you're going on the ladder, just save everybody some time.
Well, it's best of three. You're automatically going to a game two.
Yeah.
You can't play Nexus game one and what BO1.
Yeah.
So
just scoop it up, go to game two, and just try to beat them that way. I mean, it's
yeah.
just, you don't do anybody any good by just sitting on your butt and saying, okay, well, I'm going to make you play your entire deck, even though I have no way to stop you. I've lost the game in every sense of the word. It's like, you know, 99.99% chance that I'm going to lose.
Well, that's spoken like a true Nexus player, dude. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I think other people are like, screw you, you're playing Nexus. You automatically deserve to have your time wasted, like, you son of a bitch.
In Arena, it doesn't matter as much, but if you're in a tournament like the Open, where it's a timed match, and you're sitting there for 15 minutes, and they've already demonstrated they're in a loop, and they're not breaking the loop, you're not doing yourself any favors.
There's value. You are, though. There is value there. It's better to have a 1-1-1 than a 2-0 or 0-2.
It depends. It depends on when in the tournament it is. Because if you make them take 35 minutes game one, and you go to time in game two, and you don't beat them, you lost the match.
True. I'll give you that. But it's just, like, whenever I've played Nexus on Friday night or whatever, if I've played against somebody, I mean, if you and I are just playing and you demonstrate it, I'm like, okay, wow, because I'm bored. But I will make them go for a little bit to see if they screw up. Hmm. To see if by any chance, you know what, there's still a randomness to the card.
If
the only cards in their deck at this point is Teferi, you know, two Teferis and, you know, whatever, okay, fine. You know what, you're just going to loop. And I mean, if I can get them down to the, you know, you're just going to keep looping Teferi, well, now you have to forfeit in paper. Like, that could be what he was doing, was he was trying to get him to the point where he's looping Teferi.
Yeah, but it was Simic Nexus, so there was no Teferi. He had Tamio.
You're right.
It was Tamio. So he was going to basically go down to the point where his deck was nothing but Nexus of Fate with Callous Dismissal in his graveyard and just constantly loop Callous Dismissal, make a 1-1, poke you. And the thing is, too, is when the guy got up and left, the Simic Nexus player already had six turns banked, which means even if he messed up, he had six turns to fix it.
Now imagine if he had a Hydroid Krasis.
Well, yeah, the game would have been over a whole hell of a lot faster.
That's just it. I can't imagine doing Simic Nexus without it. I understand the card there, but with Tamio, so I understand the whole Callous Dismissal, but with Tamio, I would probably remove Blink of an Eye, and instead, or Sinister Sabotage, one of those, and put in a Hydroid Krasis and let me grab it from the graveyard just to end the game. Mm. Just if I can get to the point where I can pull it out of the graveyard even and cast it for six.
It might be for the random. This might be one of those situations where it's like that 1 in 100 situation where you make the mistake of casting it for 8. You know, X is 8. You've only got 3 cards left in your deck and you deck yourself and lose. It's one of those things that you would have to really screw up poorly to do it, but they're basically eliminating all the possibilities, basically making sure that you've guaranteed yourself the win, because Tamio, with her ability, she just look at the top four. If your library is only 3 cards, she doesn't care about that.
Right. Well, I mean, with that, we probably ought to start thinking about
end step.
All right, so we're going to start picking up our cards here, but, man, what a good show tonight. I had a lot of fun with this one.
There was a lot to talk about. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, next week we'll probably get into a little bit deeper. I mean, I don't think there's any events this weekend, are there?
This weekend, I don't think so.
Okay.
Definitely nothing on Star City's side. I don't know if there's a GP or something.
Next week could be an interesting. Hey, send us email, guys.
Yes.
We need to ask Aramis. We need content. All right. But, you know, we're going to start picking up our cards, putting them in the boxes. We wanted to let you guys know how to find us through the various interwebs and, you know, through our social media. Both Aramis and I stream Arena on the Planestalkers podcast channel on Twitch whenever we can. You can look us up there. Look up Planestalker Podcast. And you can actually also follow me on Twitch at MindCrime73.
I am also on Twitch, although, you know, I'm kind of never on anymore. I'm hoping to get on at some point in the future. But when I am on Twitch, I'm at RMechWRX. If you would rather follow us on Twitter... I do not have a Twitter account, although I need to get the login info for ours so I can tweet during SCG Syracuse next week.
Yes, absolutely. But how do they find you there, Aramis?
Once I get the information from somebody over there on the other side of the screen, we are at PlainsTalkersPod on Twitter. So at PlainsTalkerPod.
And my personal Twitter is at WR Benson. And of course, you can always follow us on Facebook. Just look at PlainsTalker and like and follow our page there. And you know, you can watch us do this live. We record every Monday. Usually around 8 o'clock right now until the summer when my fiance will have a little bit of break from work here.
And don't forget that you can also email us, ask us for advice on our Ask Aramis section. I can offer you tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. If you do want to send us an email, our address is podcast@plainstalkerspodcast.com.
And finally, we really would really like to encourage you to go to iTunes and leave us a review. I mean, even if you listen to us on Stitcher or other things, iTunes is where podcasts are, unfortunately. And so if you can go there, leave us a positive review, 4 or 5 stars. Tell us what you like about the show. We'd really love to hear it. And the more reviews you leave us, we're going to read them on the air. So with that, Aramis and I are going to go ahead and start backing ourselves out. We want to thank you guys for listening this week. This has been episode, I think, 16.
17 or 18, I think.
Oh, it might be 17. So for Aramis Perez, this is Will Benson saying...